The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling something tricky, something most people just see as, you know, entertainment.
Right. Just laughs.
Exactly. But we're going deeper into Matthew Bevis's analysis.
Yeah.
Comedy. It really makes you rethink what laughter is all about.
Yeah. And that's kind of our mission here for you today.
Yeah.
We want to unpack why Bevis argues comedy is way more than just jokes. It's actually a serious way of thinking critically.
A philosophical tool, almost.
Pretty much.
Uh-huh.
A tool for dealing with human imperfection. For survival, really.
It feels so relevant now, doesn't it? I mean, we're surrounded by absurdity, social chaos, just information overload.
Totally.
Bevis seems to suggest that if tragedy is about, you know, dying nobly, comedy, well, the comic worldview he talks about,
yeah,
it's about how we manage to keep living, how we stay resilient.
It's about accepting the mess. It is. It's like a defense mechanism, a critical lens, even a social glue, all rolled into one chuckle. But okay, before we dive too deep, maybe we should talk about Matthew Bevis himself.
Good idea. Who is he and why should we listen to him on comedy?
Well, he's a professor of English literature at Oxford, a really distinguished academic.
Okay.
And his background covers literary theory, poetry, the history of criticism. It's quite broad. And that's important because he's not just looking at stand-up routines.
Right. He's looking at how thinkers and writers across history have used humor.
Exactly. He connects the dots between, say, ancient philosophy, Shakespeare, Freud, right up to today's culture.
So he treats comedy as this, like, fundamental intellectual thread woven through everything.
Precisely. That's his unique angle. He puts comedy right in the middle of Western thought. And he argues that the fact it's so slippery, so hard to define, that's actually its strength.
And he makes these big ideas accessible.
Yeah, he's known for being rigorous, but also, you know, readable.
Okay.
Which you definitely need for a subject like this.
Okay, so let's get to the book's core idea. If you had to boil it down, what's Bevis saying comedy is, fundamentally?
He argues it's this really powerful lens, a way humanity explores the stuff that makes us uncomfortable but is universal. You know, death, our bodies being weird, our social anxieties, our own foolishness.
So he shifts the question, not just what's funny, but
what does this comedy do? What's its function? What does it achieve for us or about us?
Ah, okay. That definitely elevates it beyond just entertainment. Puts it on par with tragedy, almost.
Yeah, like its necessary partner in understanding the human condition. And he completely rejects finding one single definition for comedy.
Because it's full of contradictions.
Exactly. So instead of a neat definition, the book gives you like a toolkit, different ways to approach it, which is much more useful, really.
And the book takes you on a tour.
Sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Chronologically and thematically. Starts by challenging old ideas about laughter being, I don't know, unserious. Then moves through the big theories, different forms like satire, farce.
And connects it all back to the body and society.
Right. And the big takeaway from that overview, for me anyway, is this idea of the comic worldview.
The philosophy of imperfection.
Yeah. Celebrating just muddling through continuity, community. It's like a vote for life, even messy life, over some grand tragic ending.
That survival angle is really interesting. Okay, let's get into the mechanics then. Why do we laugh? Bevis starts by pushing back against that old suspicion of laughter, right? Plato wasn't a fan.
Not really, no. Bevis wants to establish comedy as a genuine form of thought, a way of knowing things. And that leads him straight into the three big theories of humor.
Which he doesn't see as competing.
No, more like different tools in the toolbox.
Yeah.
The first one is the superiority theory, often linked with Hobbes.
Isn't that the sort of mean one, laughing because someone else slipped on a banana peel? That feeling of sudden superiority?
It can seem mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's crucial for understanding things like mockery, ridicule, satire. We laugh at someone's mistake or misfortune.
And that reinforces the group that's laughing.
Exactly. It draws a line, us who get it, versus them who don't or who messed up. It's quite social.
Okay, so if that's about feeling superior, what about humor that's more intellectual, the clever stuff?
Ah, that's the incongruity theory. Thinkers like Kant are associated with this one, is cognitive.
The setup and the punchline.
Basically, yeah. Your brain expects one thing
based
on the setup and then gets something else entirely unexpected, but crucially, still makes a weird kind of sense.
So puns, witty remarks, surreal jokes, that kind of thing.
Precisely. It's the pleasure of the mental surprise, the violation of the pattern.
Got it. And the third one.
That's the relief theory, which Freud championed. This sees laughter as more physiological. It's about releasing built-up nervous energy or psychic tension.
Okay, that makes sense for dark humor, maybe. Or even just laughing nervously when things get super awkward.
Absolutely. You're letting off steam.
Yeah.
It lets us touch on taboo topics, aggression, anxiety, in a way that's, well, socially acceptable because it's framed as a joke.
So, superiority, incongruity, relief.
And Beavis suggests the best comedy often hits maybe two or even all three of those notes simultaneously. It makes you feel smart, surprises you, and lets out some tension.
That's a really useful framework. Okay, moving from why we laugh to how comedy works, Beavis looks at different forms, right? Even the lowbrow stuff.
Yeah, he argues every form has its place in its own kind of intelligence. Take satire.
The corrective form, using humor to criticize.
Right. Using wit, ridicule, irony to expose vice or foolishness, often with the aim of prompting change. Think Jonathan Swift, or maybe a modern political satire show. It wants to make bad ideas look ridiculous.
And then there's farce, pure physical chaos, slapstick. People probably dismiss that one easily.
They do, but Beavis says it's powerful because it taps directly into our anxieties about losing control. Losing control of our bodies, of situations.
Like a classic silent movie chase scene, or maybe something from, I don't know, Fawlty Towers.
Exactly, that escalating physical disaster. It's funny partly because we recognize that fear of things just falling apart bodily.
And romantic comedy, not just fluff.
He argues it's actually a really important social narrative. Less about the individuals finding true love, maybe, and more about reaffirming community, compromise.
And bringing things back to a sense of order, like those Shakespearean comedies ending in weddings.
Precisely. It's about social continuity, rebuilding the group.
And that focus on the physical.
Yeah.
That leads to a whole section on comedy and the body, doesn't it? Why is that so central?
Well, think about tragedy. It often deals with the soul, high ideals, grand emotions. Comedy, though.
Yeah.
It's usually grounded in the physical.
Eating, drinking, sex, falling over.
All of it. Our appetites, our vulnerabilities. Beavis argues it gives us this kind of democratic view because, well, everybody has a body and everybody is fallible.
And this is where the idea of the carnivalesque comes in. Sounds intense.
It is. It draws on the work of Mikhail Bakhtin. It describes those moments, like festivals historically, where normal social hierarchies get turned upside down. And there's this big celebration of the lower bodily stratum, eating, drinking, sex, digestion, often in a really exaggerated, grotesque way. It's about mocking the high and mighty and celebrating earthy, physical life, regeneration.
That celebration of the shared body seems to link directly to comedy in society, because laughter isn't usually a solo activity.
Almost never. It's deeply social. But that creates this huge paradox Beavis explores.
Okay, what's the paradox?
Well, on one hand, laughter can be really conservative. Think about schoolyard teasing. Bergson talked about laughter as a social gesture to enforce norms.
You mean if someone steps out of line, the group laughs to correct them?
Exactly. It polices behavior. It reinforces who's in the group by mocking whoever's out or different.
Wait, we also think of comedians as rebels, speaking truth to power. How can it be conservative and subversive?
Ah, that's the tension Beavis loves. Because it's also absolutely a subversive force. Think of the court jester, the fool.
The only one allowed to criticize the king?
Right. Satire, parody.
Yeah.
They use ridicule to challenge authority, to question the status quo. Comedy lives in that messy space between upholding norms and tearing them down. Its power is that contradiction.
So after all the chaos, the jokes, the social commentary, what about the end? The comic ending the wedding, the feast, what's the deeper meaning there?
This is really the philosophical heart of the book's conclusion, where tragedy often ends in death, isolation, finality.
The comic ending is about more life.
Exactly. Reconciliation, community forming, even if it's a flawed community, accepting a world that's maybe just good enough. It's a fundamental vote for continuity for the social group carrying on.
A collective exhale, almost. Okay, we made it through. Mm-hmm. That really ties it all together. So let's try to pull out the main themes, the big takeaways for us.
Okay. First one, for me, is definitely comedy as a philosophical inquiry. Just stop seeing it as trivial escapism.
Right. See it as a toolkit for actually engaging with reality, but using wit and laughter instead of, say, despair.
Yeah. Second, the centrality of the body. Comedy constantly reminds us we're physical creatures, flesh and blood, fallible.
That democratic view you mentioned, it grounds us in our shared weaknesses in a way.
Which leads straight to the third theme, embracing failure and resilience. The comic hero isn't usually heroic in the tragic sense. They're survivors. They mess up, they fall down, but they get back up and muddle through.
That feels like a really vital perspective for, well, just living day to day, adaptability.
Totally. And fourth, that paradox of comedic function we just talked about.
That it can police norms and challenge power at the same time.
Yes. And that tension is precisely why it's so dynamic and culturally important. It's not one or the other, it's both.
The book sounds like it's packed with these kinds of perspective-shifting ideas.
Oh, definitely. Lots of memorable lines that really crystallize the arguments.
Let's share a couple. What's a key one about how we should approach comedy?
Beavis said something like, "We should stop asking comedy to provide a simple definition of itself and instead learn to think with its complexities."
Ah, so treat it like an active process, not a puzzle to be solved.
Yeah. Engage with the messiness. And then there's the one about the ending.
The contrast with tragedy.
Right. Where the tragic ending offers the finality of death, the classic comic ending offers the continuity of life. A vote for the social group over the isolated individual. It gives real weight to that final party scene.
Makes you see rom-com endings differently.
It does. And one more on the ethics of social humor. The laugh that excludes is also the laugh that includes, and every comedic community is built on the foundation of shared understanding and shared blindness.
Wow, that really captures the double-edged sword of in-group jokes, doesn't it? Who's in, who's out?
Yeah, the complexity of drawing those lines with laughter.
Okay, so these are fascinating ideas, but how can we, you know, actually use them in everyday life?
Well, first off, enhanced media literacy. Seriously, next time you're watching anything funny, a sitcom, a stand-up special, even a politician trying to be witty, try to analyze it.
Ask, is this working because I feel superior? Is it the surprise? Is it releasing tension?
Exactly. You move from just passively consuming it to actively understanding the mechanics, the power dynamics underneath. It changes how you watch things.
Okay, that's practical. What else?
Second, maybe personal resilience. Adopting that comic frame Beavis talks about for your own life.
So when you mess up or face a setback,
instead of seeing it as this huge, tragic, isolating failure, you try to view it through a comic lens. Acknowledge the unavoidable human absurdity of it all.
Accept the imperfection, basically. Ask, okay, this is ridiculous. How do I just keep going? Rather than, why me?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's a way to process setbacks without getting crushed by them. It's about finding a way to muddle through.
That sounds genuinely helpful. And a third application.
Maybe more effective communication, especially if you're in any kind of leadership or group situation.
Huh.
Understanding that paradox of humor.
The in-group, out-group thing.
Yeah. Being aware of how jokes can build bonds, but also exclude. If you're trying to foster an inclusive environment, you need to be really mindful of who the target of the humor is and who's included in the laughter.
That makes a lot of sense. So wrapping up, what's the single biggest lesson here?
I think it's that we've consistently undervalued comedy. We treat it as lightweight. But Beavis shows it's this incredibly powerful intellectual and emotional tool. The very messiness and contradiction we see in comedy isn't a flaw. It's the source of its strength.
So the real shift is moving from asking, is this funny, which is subjective,
right,
to asking, what is this comedy doing? Yeah. What is it showing us about ourselves, about our society?
Exactly. By taking comedy seriously, you unlock this huge amount of wisdom about, well, everything. Human nature, society, how we make meaning.
It turns laughter from just a noise into a form of thought.
That's the goal. That's the power of the comic worldview.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.